It's been a rough couple of years for police community relations in America. Barely a week goes by without some report of some community roiled by behavior by police, or at least interpretations of that behavior. So some departments are making moves to consider how officers are trained and whether they can and should be trained somewhat differently. Eureka is one city where new kinds of training are being put into effect. Eureka police have adopted principled policing. It includes concepts like implicit bias in officers, how to recognize that, how to deal with it. Let's learn more about some of the concepts contained within principled policing. Two guests from the Eureka Police Department join us. Detective Corey Watson is one of them. Corey Watson, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Sergeant Edward Wilson is with us as well. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Jeff.
So I'm not sure who's best equipped to answer any of these questions, so just figure out among yourselves, but how long have you had principled police training, principled policing training in Eureka?
This is a new class. It's a new class across the state of California. So we started implementing this program back in October of 2017, where Sergeant Wilson and I attended the Train the Trainer course and got the information we needed to be able to facilitate the class. And since then, we're still working on implementation to get all of our officers trained, but we have completed one course and we're got another two scheduled.
All right, so it is a gradual process, Detective Watson, where you get the trainers trained and then they come back and train more people and on down the line?
Yes, exactly. And we also make sure that our class is approved by the state POST organization, which is the governing board for police training in California.
Peace Officer Standard Training, POST?
Yep, POST.
Okay. So you mentioned that it's going on all over California. Is it required in California, all California police jurisdictions?
It's not required at this point, but we do anticipate that to be a post requirement at some point. There are other organizations that teach us similar topics, but at this point it is something that's being promoted, and I think the most departments are adopting it, but I don't believe it's a post requirement at this time.
So Sergeant or Detective, where was the program developed at first?
So the program was actually developed through a partnership of several different agencies. So POST obviously was involved in that, Stockton Police Department. They used concepts and curriculum developed by Chicago Police Department, Yale University, and then the implicit bias part of the curriculum was developed by Stanford.
I noticed that Stanford SPARK is involved here, and that's an acronym that requires some explanation because it's SPARQ, Social Psychological Answers to Real World Questions. So judging by that name, this is an effort to make life better for a lot of people just by figuring out better approaches.
Yes, exactly. And they offered a lot of what this program is based on for the science part of it, gave a very scientific explanation as to, you know, where some of these implicit biases come from, why do we have them, and really kind of driving home the point that this isn't just a police thing. This is, a human nature thing. Implicit bias is something that you see in every walk of life. We're human beings.
So implicit bias, well, let's walk into that just a bit, into the concept itself, because as you mentioned, it does happen to human beings, and you know, if it were explicit bias, you'd be saying horrible things to people, but implicit bias is a bit more subtle. What are some of the keys to recognizing it within yourself?
You know, one thing that we always want to make sure that everybody realizes is that we all have implicit bias. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing, but implicit bias comes from your upbringing, your view on the world. It comes from the influences that you've had in your life. So implicit bias is something that's hard to define and hard to recognize. And also not always a bad thing. So one of the key points in this is that, you know, sometimes our biases give us those kind of gut feelings or that hair on the back of your neck. Those are based on something and something that we shouldn't ignore. But at the same time, we can't be using our bias to affect how we're implementing our policing.
So there is potentially some recognition of danger that comes from implicit bias?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, implicit bias is exactly that. It's that it can be that fight or flight thing where, you know, you think that maybe, you know, you're back in caveman days and there's a predator, there's some movement in the bush or something that makes you react. Well, we should pay attention to those reactions. And in policing, we do a lot. We train, you know, to pay attention to those subtle little hints that tell us that something's wrong. So, you know, for example, if I make contact with somebody and they're doing something to try to turn their body away or shield themselves from me, I need to pay attention to that. And a lot of what I'm paying attention to is based on my implicit bias in my training as a police officer, and probably not something that, you know, my mom would pay attention to when she was walking down the street or talking to somebody. So it's kind of, you know, having to decide and define, well, where on that spectrum of paying attention to those things, you know, are our police, and where does it become a problem?
Well, that's a great realm to explore, though, because it seems like in police situations where you're dealing with people who are potentially dangerous, and police themselves carry weapons that make them potentially dangerous. I mean, are you trying to train sudden reactions out? Are you trying to train in the ability to make very quick judgments and observations?
No, I don't want anybody to think that we're training anything out. Police training is extremely complex, and it occurs over years of our careers. What this part of our program is designed for is to have a conversation and to start recognizing in ourselves where those implicit biases are. And maybe, you know, if you have an implicit bias that's making you pay attention to, one particular group of people, why are you doing that? And making sure that we're doing that legally and that we're not doing that based on something overt or something dangerous like racism. You know, that's kind of where that bias line is. Implicit bias, not always bad. Racism, obviously, extremely bad and not something we're going to ever condone in any part of our society. And what this class is designed for is to have a conversation with our officers, to have that hard conversation of what are our implicit biases, where do they lie.
We are talking about principled policing training, which has been adopted in Eureka by the EPD. Detective Corey Watson is with us, as is Sergeant Edward Wilson. You may have questions about the process and procedures and some of the concepts involved within the principled policing training. Ouch. We'd like to hear from you on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Sergeant Edward Wilson, set up the training that you guys got for us. I mean, how many other officers there from and I assume from all over California?
That's correct, Jeff. There were a number of agencies that were represented throughout California, most of the northern part of the state. However, it does go statewide. And it was basically our introduction to this particular course, and it gave us a chance to go through and learn from instructors who have already provided this training a number of times, and we got to get right into it and break down every module that this basically entails, and allows us to experience it a little bit, to experience the things that were uncomfortable, even for us as potential instructors, and to then get ready to take it back to our own department and find out how we're going to do that.
You know, I imagine that by the time you reach the rank of sergeant, you've seen a few things and learned a bit about the things that go on in police officers' minds and lives. But were there some surprises even then for you as you got the training to deliver the principled policing training yourself?
Yes, Jeff. You know, I think the big thing is when we look back at the history of some of the encounters with law enforcement and people of color going way back, I mean, those are always hard. It's hard history to look at. As me being a law enforcement officer now for almost 20 years, we look back at those days and so grateful that we're not there any longer. But it is hard to see. But it's something that I think it's necessary for young officers that are just starting this profession to actually get a chance to experience and to see this is where we were and this is where we need to be and this is where we're going. And I think that there's some strong messages to be heard there.
When you guys got trained or when you did the training for the officers in Eureka, are there particular things unique to Eureka that were emphasized?
Nothing really particular to Eureka. You know, really just generally the message being that really people are more, that we deal with law enforcement, people that have an encounter with law enforcement, they're more concerned about the process, how are they treated by us, and not necessarily the outcome. You can stop somebody for a traffic violation, go through the process, and end up writing them a ticket that could cost them several hundred dollars, but they're going to remember how you were treated, not necessarily the fact you got the ticket. You know, how did we talk to you? Did we talk down to you? Did we treat you with respect? Did we give you an opportunity to explain that you might have had a reason for doing what you did? And so I think the big message for law enforcement is we're trying to teach our younger people that there is a process in place, and that process is what matters to people, not necessarily the outcome. And when we look at it,
so is the training now very? I mean, just the basic level of police training, is it very different now from what it was like 20 years ago?
I don't know if it's a lot different. There are certainly more modules geared toward how we deal with people, both whether it be just how we deal with people in general or deal with people with mental illness and such. There, you know, but it's really, you know, it's changed with the times, with society and such. We've had to change our tactics and, like I said, how we were able to talk to people and really and be successful on the street, and then and also making sure that law enforcement officers are treating people with respect.
Principled police training, principled policing, I should say, training in Eureka is the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Sergeant Edward Wilson and Detective Corey Watson are with the Eureka Police Department, and we'll be happy to take your phone calls and emails about your impressions of the program or things you think should be included in police training, perhaps. 800-838-3760 to join the conversation by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Detective Corey Watson, I want to come back in on the idea of first encounters and trying to get officers to understand the kinds of implicit bias they may be dealing with, because it seems like one of the most important things that any police officer needs to do in any situation is be able to size it up very quickly. And I'm just curious to know if implicit bias has any element of, like, take a second, size it up a little longer, anything like that.
No, not really. The implicit bias part of this is more talking about the kind of the impression that you give on people. So in those rapidly evolving, you know, high dangerous situations where you are having to size people up so quickly that you don't have the opportunity to take a second, you know, this training isn't necessarily going to help address those kinds of situations. A lot of times those are outside of our control.
Mm-hmm.
What we're talking about here is, you know, making sure that when you decide you're going to stop that car, that, you know, I have faith that the Eureka Police Department and a vast majority of law enforcement across the community, all across the country, are not doing that for any reason except that that person committed some sort of crime or traffic infraction, that they have a reason. But the important part that we're missing is that we don't always tell the person the reason and then give them the opportunity to tell us, you know, their side of it, to give them the voice to say, hey, but this is why I was doing this. And, you know, part of... And unfortunately, everybody has this experience of a bad cop experience.
Sure.
So, you know, what can we do to maybe change some of that? Because even as a law enforcement officer, I've had a bad cop experience. And what this training is more geared towards is saying, hey, let's take a second to give that person a voice and to offer them some respect and explain why you're making the stop. So if I do a traffic stop and the person that I stop is, you know, any other color than myself, to make them understand and give them the opportunity to speak and say, you know, this stop is based on the fact that you ran that stop sign, and that's it. That I don't have any other, you know, intentions or motivations that I'm stopping you because you ran a stop sign. And to have that conversation with the person. And so instead of avoiding those conversations or, you know, throwing the ticket at them and walking away, giving them the respect to explain themselves.
I can imagine this would make for a somewhat longer transaction, which is probably okay as long as people walk away understanding why they were stopped. But if the response comes, no, you didn't stop me because I drifted through the stop sign. You stopped me because my skin is darker than yours. Is the officer now supposed to say something back where they weren't before?
You know, I don't think any officer is going to shy away from that conversation, though. I mean, I certainly wouldn't when I was a new officer, and I don't now that I'm more of a senior officer. Okay, I want to know why you're saying that. You know, what is the reasoning behind that? Because there's probably something there. There's probably some reason that that person feels like that. And it could be something as simple as they got stopped two blocks ago for the same thing. You know, and if you don't know that or you need to explain to that person, no, sir, I'm sorry, that's not why I did it. And then the other thing is to, you know, not be afraid to say things like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that. You know, officers, we all kind of put up a wall.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure everybody's experienced that. And we need to kind of break down that wall a little bit and be better communicators.
But is that wall required up to some point just to be able to maintain control of a situation? I mean, when you're, you know, trying to administer justice, you need to be able to kind of hold court in a sense, aren't you?
No, I don't.
Court was a bad term, but I mean is just to sort of control the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's no part of this training that we're going to tell officers that they need to change their tactics, their police tactics. You know, you're never going to stop thinking about officer safety.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to stop thinking about, you know, how do I control the situation? And sometimes we don't get to give people procedural justice until well after the situation has calmed down. But at some point in that, we hopefully can. An example I have is that we show a video in this training that we call Big Mike, and it's a police agency back east somewhere, and I don't know the situation that led up to it, but the video kind of starts with a very, very large man with his hands on the hood of a police car refusing to do what the cops say. And at some point in the training, or at some point in the video, they have to use force, and they end up taking him to the ground, and they handcuff him. But at the end of all of that, they sit him back up, and they say, What was that, man? Like, Mike, like, why did that happen? And they go back, you know, they give orders, they increase their command and their control of the situation, and they bring it back down, and they give him a little respect to explain himself. And that's not going to happen every time. You know, we're not always going to have that good outcome to a situation like that where we can have a conversation with somebody. But if we can, we should.
Principled policing training, the topic here in the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to two trainers from the Eureka Police Department, Detective Corey Watson and Sergeant Edward Wilson. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Corey, you mentioned the term procedural justice just now, which is one of the major components of the principled policing training, isn't it, along with the implicit bias module?
It is, yeah, exactly. It's, you know, They go hand in hand. Procedural justice and implicit bias are the two big concepts in our training, and we spend a lot of time talking about what they are and how they affect people.
And I noticed there are four major tenets in here: voice, neutrality, respect, and trustworthiness. Can you guys take us through those one at a time?
Sure, Jeff. So, like Corey is talking about the particular video that dealt with the large man that was taken into custody by the officers, but basically, giving somebody a voice, a lot of times we can diffuse things by giving somebody an opportunity to answer a question or to voice whatever their concerns are they're having before while we're dealing with them. And I think that's a big part of it, our ability to talk to somebody and give them that opportunity. Now, that can be limited at times because it depends on the severity of the situation. We certainly are always our goal is always to try to make that happen, but obviously it depends on, again, what that officer is dealing with at the time. But giving them an opportunity to respond to you and to voice that concern may hopefully diffuse them to an extent where we get that voluntary cooperation and we don't need to use force or anything like that. And then, of course, the neutrality is basically us being fair, us being neutral in the situation, that we're basically trying to gather the facts. We're either making an arrest or we're dealing with a situation based on the law enforcement need there, and that it's not generated by anything else. We're not there because of what they look like or who they are. We're there because there's some police need.
You got a respect part of there too, I see.
And then the respect, obviously treating them with respect. You know, we need to humanize people, and I think that's the thing with young officers. They get trained in the academy and they come out, and the hardest thing is that both now as a supervisor and prior to this when I was a field training officer is getting people comfortable with talking to people, and that's a big thing. You know, walking up to a car when you've never met a person before and telling them why you stopped them, and you know, and asking for the right documentation, being able to treat them with respect and to keep the conversation going there.
Yeah, I never even thought about that particular part of it, though, as you mentioned it, that you know, you can be shy and be a police officer. It doesn't help, I'm sure, but the fact is that you know, any human interaction where you're meeting somebody for the first time in a difficult situation should be hard on you as a human, or often is anyway.
Absolutely. You know, and again, it is. It's very difficult to get people into that mindset of being able to talk to people. And again, it's what our job's all about, whether it be taking a police report, making a, you know, dealing with somebody who is otherwise in crisis, and just day to day. They have to be able to do that, and we really try and push that with our people. And it's the biggest thing, and the last thing, the trustworthiness part of it is basically treating people the way that we would like to be treated. I think that we as law enforcement get categorized as being unapproachable and such, and that's what we're trying to change with this training also, Jeff. We're trying to really market that, you know, people should be able to come up and talk to us. We should be able to have difficult conversations with the public And that's the only way that policing really works is when we can work with the community. And I think that this training helps open those doors. And I think that when people see that we're really trying to change things, we can't go back and change history, but we can rewrite what goes on in the future here. We have an opportunity to make some positive impact there. And I think that's the greatest thing about what we're doing now in law enforcement.
So even if the principal policing training made a big impression on an officer and they've got everything in there, the implicit biases sticking with them, the procedural justice, the subtenets of voice, neutrality, respect, and trustworthiness, if they get into a situation and, you know, we all meet a few people in our lives who just don't seem to respond to authority in any way, shape, or form other than with hostility. I mean, and so what happens then? I mean, you just have to throw this stuff to the side?
No, I think that you make every effort to try and gain. There, you know, you work toward it. There's obviously going to be times where it's not going to work. I mean, you know, that's those are the sad times when we can't talk somebody down. We can't use communication as a means to diffuse things. That's always our goal, obviously, is to always walk away without having had to use force. That's never something that we like to do, never something we want to do. But there are times where it's simply not going to be a perfect situation, and we may not be able to diffuse it with you even using the four tenets and being able to give somebody their voice and try to break it down that way. You know, some people are just not going to be open to that, and they may have had so many bad experiences that just one more experience with us is the one that pushes them over the edge. And so, you know, God forbid that's the case. We try our best not to let that happen. But like I said, no, it's not a perfect situation. All we can do is our best as law enforcement officers to diffuse and to. I always look at it the fact that my job is to try my best to make things better when I get to a situation, not make it worse. But sometimes people are already at that top level, and we really just have to deal with it and do our best. And that's when, obviously, as law enforcement officers, that's when it's most dangerous for us, and obviously can be most dangerous for the people that we're involved with based on their responses.
I have a couple more questions, and I see we have a call here waiting, too. If you guys can come back after the break, I have about 5 more minutes with you. Is that okay?
Great.
Okay, back with Sergeant Edward Wilson and Detective Corey Watson from Eureka Police Department on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 5. It's 8:36 on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are on the air on radio stations in Northern California and Southern Oregon. We are also available streaming on the internet at jeffexchange.org and ijpr.org. We're continuing a discussion about principled policing training. It has been installed at the Eureka Police Department, among many other departments across the state of California. And we're talking to the two people who got trained to bring the program back to Eureka and to be able to train more officers there, Detective Corey Watson and Sergeant Edward Wilson from the Eureka Police Department. You're welcome to join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email comments go to jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Steve and Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Howdy.
Hi.
In Portland, just last week, a guy going through serious mental problems got killed by 8 police officers. And this keeps cropping up in news stories over and over. How much training do you guys do to deal with people that have serious mental health problems?
All right.
And how do you keep from, you know, killing them.
All right. Thanks for that, Steve. Appreciate that. Detective Watson?
Well, I can only speak to California. I can't speak to the Oregon training system because I'll be honest, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But we train constantly. We think about those situations constantly, and it's the situation that every officer dreads. None of us want to be put into that position. And we... You know, everybody does their best to try to talk to people like that, but, you know, the people who are, you know, in our community, we experience people who are under the influence of controlled substances and drugs and then also have mental health problems, and, you know, we find that those are some of the most tense, difficult situations, and we always try everything we can. In our community, we have partnerships with our mental health staff to try to de-escalate some of those situations.
They do occasionally ride with officers, don't they?
In Eureka, they do, and sometimes, yeah. And then they're also available to come out to scenes if we need them. But there's situations out there, and I cannot speak to what happened in Portland because I was not there.
Mm-hmm,
but,
sure. Does principal policing training include any module that deals specifically with mental illness, or is that just part of the general training?
No, that's just part of the general training. Principal policing is more a conversation about the community, kind of the bigger picture of the community and how the community views policing. We lean more towards the idea that, you know, our legitimacy and our job, you know, our authority comes from our communities, and that the more we can partner with our communities, the more we can have conversations maybe with people who do have mental illness and give them the four tenets of procedural justice, that might change some future event. You know, that might make it so that they trust one of us or that they're willing to pause and listen, or maybe, you know, come out of whatever crisis they're in for just a brief moment and recognize that, you know, we're people, and see that one officer that treated them with respect and fairness and neutrality that one time, and maybe diffuse these situations before they happen.
Let's take another call here from Phil in Eureka. Welcome to The Exchange with Detective Corey Watson and Sergeant Edward Wilson.
Yes, hi. I hear a lot of news items regarding police shooting black-skinned people, especially in the back and so forth. And it seems to me that in some cases it isn't necessarily racism as much as it's incompetence. I guess your department is trying to be as competent as possible about training your deputies. But I imagine that from one police department to another one, there could be deficiencies in personnel. First of all, in personnel, well, who you hire, maybe you don't have a lot of choices. And secondly, there's deficiencies in the training of these officers that are not necessarily racist, but they're scared. They're absolutely scared. I mean, what do you do when somebody you were talking to decides to walk away? Do you shoot them?
All right. Thanks for the questions and the observations, Phil. Appreciate that. Sergeant Wilson?
Yeah, Jeff, you know, to kind of get into that, it's the state of California and our post police training is regarded as some of the best in the country. And obviously, anybody that gets into law enforcement is put through a basic law enforcement academy. And then once you get out of the academy and you start your street experience, then there's obviously advanced, what we call advanced officer training. And I think what it comes down to is that we do our best to train our people right, train our people to prepare them for any situation they're going to be in. But as law enforcement, it's such a – there's so many variables with everything that we deal with, every contact. We never know how it's going to go. It's hard to train people to a point where they're going to be able to respond to every situation the same way. Like there's so many so many variables. So to say that it's a perfect process, all we can do is present the training. We can train them. We can hopefully put them in the right mindset, how to recognize things, how to diffuse things, and go from there. Law enforcement is a difficult profession, and again, we're dealing with people, and a lot of times people in crisis and people that we don't know and never dealt with, and we're asking officers to do a lot. So all we can do is hopefully provide them with a good basis, and a lot of their training, a lot of what their experience on the street is going to be how they develop as officers as they move forward in their career.
So in the principal policing training, I mean, did you talk about the things with, confrontations that involve guns coming out of holsters and things like that? Or was it more just about the thought processes that go into place before you get to those moments?
It's more about the thought process. This training is definitely focused on thinking kind of how we approach the whole situation. But part of our training is actually based on a Stanford study called Shoot, Don't Shoot. And Stanford did this study where, you know, they worked with things and ideas like using black primers. So, you know, they have study participants sit in a room and look at a computer screen and they flash kind of super quick pictures of faces. And they call them primers.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that, you know, if you're primed with a black face, then you're quicker to shoot. And the really interesting part of that study was that that was with normal people that are not in any way related to the law enforcement community. So those were students and people who, you know, work in every walk of life. And so it goes back to that idea of implicit bias. And then also the concept that this implicit bias is across the country, and there is an association with black men and crime, and we can't ignore that. We have to face that head on and say, okay, that is something in our society that is true, and it's true outside of the law enforcement community. And what's interesting is that when that study was repeated within the law enforcement community with officers, there's a much lower error rate. The officers are paying attention to what is in the person's hand, not just the color of that person's skin. So the hard part is, though, that, you know, when you look at our society, when you look around, watch a movie and you see that person that's the criminal, you know, the person that has a gun, that person that's committing crimes, you know, it's everywhere. It's all over social media. It's in video games. And so it's hard to work through that stuff. And the new generation of officers that are coming in have even more exposure to that than some of us that have been in the profession for a while. And what this training is for is to say, hey, this is something that's there. This is something that we need to recognize. It's something that you absolutely have to pay attention to. You know, the motivation behind what we do and why we do things has to be in the right place. Otherwise, you have no place in law enforcement.
So, Corey Watson, I have to go. Final question. How will you measure the success of principled policing training? What kind of measurements do you have in mind to track how well the training has gone?
It's hard to measure the success of this training, to be honest. So far, I think our training has been a success because it sparked a conversation. And that's what I want to see. I want to see officers and people standing around the water cooler talking about this stuff because it's important to talk about. I want to see that conversation spread to things like talking to people on the radio because it's, to me, a very important conversation and something that we need to have with each other, with our communities, and all over. So I think that's the most successful part of this is that we're having these conversations.
And I appreciate the time you gave us to talk about it today. Detective Corey Watson and Sergeant Edward Wilson are the principled policing trainers at the Eureka Police Department. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.